May it please the court, your honors, counsel. My name is Philip A. Garan, bar number 32325. I'm here on behalf of the Appellant Attorney's Title Guarantee Fund. This case comes before you. This is the second time we've heard this case. The first time around, we were discussing a legal description in a recorded instrument. The court then made a determination, a legal issue of sufficiency of the description in that instrument. I'm not here to second guess or judge that decision. The issue before the court is the appellant hasn't had his day in court. He filed a motion for summary judgment, was victorious on it. This court reversed, saying, no, that description can describe a piece of land. The factual issues, however, in the case that were cited in that prior opinion, talk about monuments and things, monuments, improvements, things that are identifiable, the location, existence of which are questions of fact. There's been no fact-finding in this case. This case has gone on for about 7 years, and I don't think I stepped into the Gilpin County Courthouse once. There's been no findings of fact, and there's been, as my brief points out, a number of issues which clearly call in genuine disputes of material fact. Our contention initially was that the legal description in that deed of trust or that instrument, it's not a deed of trust in that it doesn't have a conveyance to a public trustee or a trustee, so it's not a deed of trust in the conventional sense of what that document means. So I'll refer to it as simply the instrument. But we've always taken the position that it's impossible to identify which parcel that is. The court has said, no, you can, as long as you can approve the existence of these monuments and then put it in a location. Evidence shows, well, that's, if you did that, there's a possibility that it describes a whole other parcel altogether, lot 45. And that's mentioned throughout my brief a lot.
Counsel, I have a few questions about that observation.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm with you so far. I mean, I agree that the trial court in the first motion for summary judgment ruled that the property description was essentially too vague to describe any parcel,
right,
because we had essentially fanciful northern and southern boundaries,
right,
and the appellate division concluded that wasn't right, and then it really could describe a particular parcel.
Right.
Am I correct in assuming that so far the existence and location of lot 45 is really not logically necessary to that determination at all?
The determination of sufficiency.
Of just the facial sufficiency of the description.
That's right.
Okay. All right.
Yeah, that's right.
It has yet to be determined. The location of lot 45 has yet to be determined, as far as we know, as a matter of fact.
Any land, it hasn't been determined what land that piece, that instrument describes, because there's been no fact-finding.
Am I correct in understanding your argument, then, if lot 45 is determined, as a matter of fact, to be located within the parcel identified by the Court of Appeals, then you have an argument that the reference to an approximate 9-acre parcel could be a reference to lot 45, and it's possible that your colleague here has an interest in, or your colleague's client has an interest in land that your client doesn't own.
That's right.
Conversely, am I correct that if lot 45 is outside that parcel, it's essentially legally insignificant?
No. I think I would take some exception to that. The issue before the court on the first appeal was a legal issue. It was not a mixed issue of fact and law. It was just a simple determination whether the words used in that instrument were sufficient based on the law to describe a parcel. Okay, and what that parcel described, forgetting it now, it's, you deemed it sufficiently apt to describe a parcel, is a question of fact. And so I don't believe that the Court of Appeals was saying this is the parcel. They're saying this parcel can be described. And we factually, and I suspect and I will object, I mean, that appellee's attorney is going to present you with essentially a fact. This is what it is. But no trier of fact is ever determined. I mean, we have not had the chance to voir dire that expert. We have not had a chance to cross-examine that expert. There's other evidence that we are aware of that he, in fact, had admitted at some time in the many years that this has been going on, that the parcel that's described that the Court of Appeals said was sufficient could be one of three parcels in an email. So, I mean, there is a lot of facts out there that have to be tried by the facts. I'm not saying they're true. I'm not saying that this is the end of the day for their case. I'm saying that a judge or trier of fact has to sit and weigh the evidence, weigh the credibility of the witnesses, and look at what we have suggested. I mean, we have testimony, or we have documented competent evidence, BLM map, that shows that at the time of the conveyance of this instrument, the only distinct separate parcel that was not approximately 9 acres in Gilpin County, in that Section 17, across from the Gold Dust Motel, was Lot 45.
And Counsel, what happens procedurally? I know that there's a summary judgment and that the summary judgment is reversed. When you go back to the trial court, you just made reference to an expert that you never had an opportunity to cross-examine. Was there a discovery period that was open, that was reopened at that point? Could you have done that?
No. On remand, the judge did. There was an initial motion filed by the appellee attempting to reform the legal description. That was denied. Then they filed the instant motion from which we took appeal based on the judge's decision. So the judge never took any evidence in this case. Never asked for any evidence. We read the remand as saying, go back and have a trial, go have a fact-finding. And the judge said, I don't think I need a fact-finding. The Court of Appeals has figured this out for me. I don't think that's what you meant. I know, Judge Russell, you were on that last panel. I don't think that's what they meant. In fact, what was most indicative is there was a cross motion for summary judgment, which was not enter judgment in favor of appellee Harders. It was remand for further proceedings.
In fact, if I recall correctly, didn't the opinion allude to evidence that your opponent had that we were required to sort of credit at this stage of the proceeding? But, I mean, as far as we know, there may be no such thing as a Gold Dust Motel, I mean, right?
That's right.
We have no idea.
You have no idea. I mean, where the road is, where the creek bed is, the fact that there's contrary evidence to suggest that that's not the parcel that's described in the part that you essentially said was sufficient. I mean, if you go up, that land is very complicated land, as you know. But there is evidence that at the very least survives summary judgment, because we have testimony from the man who signed the instrument saying, and he reaffirmed it 3 or 4 times in his deposition. Lot 45, he refers to it as 2A because he was looking at a sketch drawing that I believe was produced by the very surveyor who I'm almost sure Pelley is going to whip out and say, it's not a survey even, it's just a sketch drawing. I mean, it has nothing precise about the boundaries that you say are sufficient to describe a piece of property. That has not been decided. And he says, well, the Gold Dust is here, but Lot 45 is right there. It's between the river and the road. BLM map shows that it's approximately 9 acres. All of it's within Section 17. All of it's in Gilpin County. And if you look at Lot 45 on the BLM map, it actually has a southerly orientation. It actually dips southerly into Gilpin County. And so it fits that description. But arguably, there's a factual issue that it does. And we just have, this is why we're here. We're saying to the court, the district court punted inappropriately in our view, and we want our day in court. Put the facts on, be that as they may. But you can't testify in the Court of Appeals as to facts that we don't know if they're competent evidence, whether, you know, no one's done a survey of this property, neither party. Because our contention is it's unsurveyable. But they haven't. What you're going to see is a sketch drawing. I mean, I think. I mean, I don't, I haven't seen anything other than that to this date of record in this case. So, you know, I think that the single question is attorney's title entitled to a trial after a reversal of its summary judgment? It is. Why wouldn't it be put back into a place procedurally if it never filed that motion at all? So I don't want to repeat myself, and much of it's in my briefs, and this case has a big record for no evidentiary hearings. but I would ask that this court remand the case back to the trial court for a fact finding on the very issues that were raised. There is contrary evidence. There's certainly no evidence to support that the land they believe or claim is theirs at all. There's none. Zero.
Counsel, in your oppositions to the request for summary judgment, you mentioned a couple of other defenses. One, essentially satisfaction of the debt based on someone's having acquired an equity interest in Proland, right, and also an estoppel argument. They were not repeated in your opening brief. What is your position on those? Have you abandoned those arguments?
No, we haven't. That's just our problem. We haven't been able to defend it. Mr. Harders was a longtime member of Proland. I think most would agree that the Proland folks were doing something that wasn't above board. A lot of money had been borrowed, and no one seems to know where it went. Or a lot of money had been going into this venture.
So in your view, these are just continue to be live issues.
These are live issues. And so, you know, the other issue is, in my view, you know, there is some argument as to whether the debt had in fact been satisfied. We have not, I mean, we've asked, of course we got to know, but that's for a trier of fact to judge the credibility of Mr. Harders, whose deposition testimony, in my view, was hard to believe. Mr. Nelson, on the other hand, while he may be the ultimate culprit in this case, was very credible, on the other hand. He admitted things that were contrary to his interest and denied things that you know, you wouldn't think he'd have to deny. So, you know, I think both those witnesses' credibility needs to be judged, and this case needs to stand at a trial or fact finding. I'm going to reserve the time I have left for rebuttal.
Morning, Your Honors. Armando Aguilar, attorney number 31441 for Harders Trust, the appellee. Attorney Title's appeal here reads like a petition for rehearing on this court's 2008 decision. Attorney Title's argument on its face is that the trial court's decision was in error because Harders' deed of trust actually describes Lot 45. But the trial court did not make a factual finding that Lot 45 is or is not the land described in the instrument. It did not need to make that finding, because this court in 2008 already decided as a matter of law the location of the land. The trial court merely granted a decree for foreclosure on whatever land is described in the deed of trust. This court ruled that the description was sufficient and that the land described is located within these boundaries. The motel to the north.
Excuse me, counsel. You're using a chart, and counsel, have you seen this chart?
Let me see. I think this chart is just taken from the schematic from the opinion.
This is a copy of the court's drawing on page 7 of its opinion in 2008.
Thank you.
This court said the description was sufficient, and the land is located between these boundaries: the motel to the north, the south line of section 17 to the south, the creek to the west, the highway to the east.
Counsel, when we said that, aren't we saying necessarily that the instrument on its face is sufficient to describe a parcel of property, assuming that those items are, in fact, extant and where they are purported to be described in the instrument?
Yes.
Okay. So, but we couldn't determine, as a matter of fact, that there is such a thing as a gold dust motel. or indeed that Gilpin County, the county line lies, or the end of Section 17 lies, in fact, north or south of the motel. We don't know these things, right?
That is correct. The location of the monuments referenced in the legal description have never been a factual dispute in this case.
Okay, so...
Never. Not at any stage of the proceedings in either court. This court's drawing places the land in the identical location that my expert's drawing located it. This is page 249 of the record.
Hey, once again,
the expert's drawing.
249 of the record, and that drawing was presented to the trial court in this?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
So what you're saying is that our description plus the undisputed evidence will yield a description of this parcel?
Yes.
Okay.
My expert's drawing, and this is the same piece of paper that I held up in front of this panel, well, a third of this panel, in the 2008 oral arguments. This drawing shows that the land is located, it's the same place that this court drew in its opinion. It's the same piece of land, it's in the same location, it's got the same boundaries.
So is the west and the east. And you're saying this has never been disputed, that this is undisputed, that this is the parcel we're talking about?
Yes. Yes, and I'll explain. By arguing that the land is somewhere other than where this court drew it, Attorney Title is contesting this court's decision. And of course, it's too late for that. That's what petitions for rehearing for cert are for. Attorney Title waived any challenge to that decision by not filing any kind of petition like that.
This court's decision reversed a summary judgment?
Correct.
So by reversing a summary judgment, what's the effect of that? To me, we reverse a summary judgment. We're simply saying judgment should not have entered.
Yes, but the court explained this is where the property is located. It didn't just say, no, factual issues, don't know, do it again, let's have a trial. It said, here's the property. It specifically went out of its way to say, this is where the property is located. This is the court's drawing.
I understand that that's the court's drawing, and that the court said, as I recall, that summary judgment had been entered based on the legal vitality of the description in the document.
Yes.
And this court says, yeah, that's a viable legal description. It meets the required legal description.
Yes.
And your position is we also were finding, as a matter of fact, that this parcel is located in a particular location?
This court said that these are the boundaries of the land. It is located to the south of the motel, to the north of line section 17 south line, to the west of the highway, and to the east of the creek, because it was interpreting the legal description, which is a question of law. Now, the trial court merely followed the law of the case established by this court, which is the legal description passes muster. So the trial court granted a foreclosure on the land described, wherever it is.
Okay, counsel, let me ask you a couple of factual questions. Has the actual acreage of this parcel so described been determined as a matter of fact?
The
parcel that you say the Court of Appeals described, it has been determined as a matter of fact. The trial court determined it?
No, not the trial court.
Okay.
That was not a disputed issue.
All right.
It's never been disputed that this parcel drawn by my expert is about 9 acres. It's just shy of 9 acres.
They've agreed with your expert's chart?
Excuse me?
They've agreed at some point with your expert's chart to make it an undisputed fact?
Well, they've never presented any contrary evidence.
Were they given an opportunity to present contrary evidence?
Of course. Sure. I produced experts. They produced experts.
That was one of my questions earlier about procedurally how this played out when it went back following the first decision of a prior division. Was there a discovery period?
Production or propounding of discovery after the remand, but before the first summary judgment motion was granted, there was discovery. There were depositions and there were expert disclosures.
And in the first motion for summary judgment, there was an assertion of undisputed facts. I mean, normally in a summary judgment,
the MMAP and the Nelson deposition.
And there was no dispute as to those. The other side simply said, yes, we don't dispute those facts.
the other side said there's this BLM map that shows it could be lot 45, and Mr. Nelson said in his deposition it could be lot 45. Those were the supposedly, well, those were, we had cross summary judgment motions.
Right.
Okay. And in Attorney Tyler's summary judgment motion, they were asking to for summary judgment against my foreclosure claim, right, saying that it's undisputed that the legal description is insufficient as a matter of law.
Right.
And my summary judgment was saying, well, no, it is sufficient, and we've got my expert survey, which shows where the land is and how big it is, et cetera. And by the way, when Mr. Grand represents that no survey has ever been taken, that's not quite true. I did have another surveyor do a survey plat, which has been produced and is in the record at page 600.
Just get to the core of my question. In the trial court, at the time of the first cross motions for summary judgment, as I understand it, there was then a dispute. You said this is where the land is, and this is what your expert says, and they said, no, we believe it's lot 45.
Yes, without evidence of that argument. It's just argument.
Now, so there was no affidavit, there was no deposition attached?
Let me explain the merits. Let me get right into the merits of this, okay, sure. The lot 45 issue. This case got to this court through summary judgment motions. On summary judgment, Attorney Title failed to present to the trial court or this court any competent, admissible evidence supporting its argument that the land described could be lot 45. This lot 45 argument's not new. It was made on summary judgment, it was made on the first appeal, it was made on the motions afterwards, et cetera, and here it's being made again.
Well, let me just stop you right there, because I think I disagree a little bit with your characterization. Certainly an observation about lot 45 was made, and to the extent it was made in support of an argument that the description is facially insufficient, it's simply an embellishment, right? I mean, there's no reason that lot 45 is logically necessary to a question about whether this document describes any parcel at all. So it seems to me that the location and significance then of lot 45 has yet to be determined.
Yes, it's not necessary to that legal sufficiency question.
Okay.
But the way Attorney Title prosecuted this argument,
okay,
litigated this argument, was to say, we have evidence that it's lot 45. But that evidence, this is a summary judgment standard. The trial court here did not find facts. What the trial court did is the same thing that this court did in the first appeal and can still do again because it has the power to do that, just like the trial court does, is as a matter of law determine that there's no genuine dispute of fact. By looking at the so-called evidence presented by Attorney's Title, you can look at it and say, that's not evidence. It doesn't survive a summary judgment review to find a genuine issue. Why? Because, number one, I had an expert drawing that places the property here. They did not produce any expert evidence locating this description at lot 45. They did not do that. The BLM map that is over and over referenced by Attorney Title has no relevance. This is the BLM map. It's in the record at page 845, okay? Now, this doesn't have the stamp that Attorney Title attached with a copy of this to one of the briefs. This is a blow-up of the same document that was produced to me without a stamp from Attorney's Title, okay? But this is the BLM map. This references lot numbers, government lot numbers, 55, 46, 45, 44, et cetera. That's not relevant to our legal description. My legal description doesn't use government lot numbers.
But it refers to a BLM map, the legal description. The legal description refers to a BLM map.
It refers to a map and refers to an appraisal. Nobody knows what that is.
It's not this map.
Nobody knows. But it certainly doesn't reference government lot numbers. The legal description is written in terms of specific monuments, the creek, the motel, the highway. Those monuments, none of them are on this drawing. They're not on here. There's no testimony that says it's possible to locate Harder's land on this drawing. The only use of this map is counsel's argument, and that's not evidence that survives a summary judgment review. So this drawing is not relevant. But giving it the benefit of the doubt for a minute and looking at it, if you overlay my expert's drawing of where the property is with this BLM map, you can see that the Harder's property is what's called the couch placer on this BLM map. It's the same shape, same size, same location. It's got the same cutouts for the mining claims that abut into the area. Lot 45 is way up here to the northwest. It can't be the same described property that this court drew in its decision.
If you're right, as a matter of fact, then I think the Lot 45 argument is probably a loser. But we've had no factual determination on that point.
You have no evidence in front of you on that.
We don't take evidence. We review factual determinations made by fact finders.
Of course. Agreed. That's standard fundamental laws of appellate review.
Okay.
But another fundamental rule is, on summary judgment, you have to have admissible, competent evidence, and the trial court, as well as this court on de novo review, can review and say, as a matter of law, I find that you've not presented any competent, admissible evidence to even create an issue of fact. This could have been a map of Wyoming.
Did the trial court grant your cross motion for summary judgment?
Originally, no. On remand, yes, in a manner of speaking. That's procedurally, that's what the effect was. One other thing, the description, my legal description, if there's anything clear about it at all, it's about, well, it was not a well-written description. We all know that.
I think that's safe to say.
That's the way it works, okay? If there's anything clear about it at all, it's 9 acres, about 9 acres, and it's between the creek and the highway. The most you can tell with this BLM map is that Lot 45, the entirety of it is 8.94 acres. Mr. Graham will concede, that's what this says. And if you have the creek and the highway come up, they cut a swath right through Lot 45. Right through Lot 45. It's maybe, what, an acre or two? Not the entire 9 acres. Lot 45 cannot be the description. Mr. Guerin could have hand-drawn a map of the southern corner of Colorado and said it's over there somewhere because that's west of the Gold Dust Hotel. And that would not be competent admissible evidence either. This is no more convincing. It's no more competent or admissible.
Was this map completed by the Peterson Appraisal Company?
I don't know.
Okay, so there's nothing in it. Pardon me.
Where this came from.
Pardon me.
Graham produced this.
Counsel.
Yes.
There's writing on this map.
Okay.
Does this map tell us who it was created by?
Well, it purports to have a signature from the Bureau of Land Management.
Give any indication that it was completed by the Peterson Appraisal Company? The reason I'm asking is that your legal description refers to a map completed by the Peterson Appraisal Company.
Yes.
And so there's no indication on this map that that's who created this.
No.
Okay.
And that the map reference that everybody agrees. Everybody who's touched this case, both sides, the judges at both levels have agreed. That language at the end of that description doesn't mean anything because nobody knows what the heck it's talking about. Anyway, so my point is, you can find, as a matter of law, there is no evidence to create a genuine issue of material fact in order to take it to the trial, to a trial in front of a jury.
Thank you, counsel.
Your Honors, the total mischaracterization of what happened before this case even came to the Court of Appeals. Everything about, first of all, they harnessed the burden of proving their case. Okay. We had expert testimony that refuted their description of what they said that description in the Harder's instrument described. So there was an expert rebuttal witness. More than that, the BLM map is a public document, competent evidence presented at the trial court. Okay. It shows in the 9 acre parcel. It's significant because Perlan did own it. And in fact, the deposition testimony of Craig Nelson was, hey, at some point we didn't know what Harder's instrument described. They went back to the same surveyor that Mr. Aguilar is now using, which is unfortunate for him because he probably should have had a more neutral surveyor, but he had a guy who was involved from this thing from the beginning. And he produced a sketch that said it could be one of these three properties. And that, I'm not saying that as fact. I'm not testifying here in front of as fact. And Mr. Aguilar, I'm sure, even though in his argument, he sounded like he was testifying. He was trying to tell you where the road was.
Counsel, in your limited rebuttal time, and I don't normally interrupt during rebuttals like that, but I would like you to address his assertion that you presented no evidence to support that it could be Lot 45 at the summary judgment level.
Well, yeah, that's, I think it goes to Judge Russell's point. It's like an embellishment of the issue of sufficiency. We only challenge sufficiency. We didn't get a chance then to say and defend the claim that it's something else. And in fact, Attorney Tidal's position is if it describes anything, it's Lot 45.
Counsel, let me ask you this.
Okay.
Let's say it's determined, as a matter of fact, that Lot 45 lies outside the bounds of the description that the Court of Appeals rendered, that it's, say, north of the Gold Dust Motel. Doesn't that necessarily mean that it can't be Lot 45?
Well, first of all, the way we have this drawn, this is south of the Gold Dust. The description says it's across from the Gold Dust, and we have deposition.
Okay, so let me rephrase my question. If it's outside the boundaries delineated by the Court of Appeals, isn't it legally irrelevant? Because it can't be Lot 45. We've told you that the description identifies, facially identifies this parcel. We may have all sorts of questions about that parcel.
Sure.
Okay.
I think that there's facts missing.
Of course. But if it's determined, as a matter of fact, then it can't be Lot 45, right?
Yeah, and then we go to trial, we lose. Amen.
All right. I understand your answer.
Counsel, I still have a question. So, I mean, what we have here is we have a trial court having to make a determination that there are, based on undisputed, no genuine issue of material fact, that Harders is entitled to judgment as a matter of law. In order for you to establish a genuine issue, do you not have to fit that Lot 45 into this legal description somehow? Do you not have to say to the court, here we have Lot 45, here it is situated on this map, and you can see that it comports with this description?
Well, listen, on summary judgment level, I don't know that I have to prove my case beyond whatever the standard would apply at trial. I only have to create a doubt of there exists a genuine dispute of a material fact, and we have done that.
You're saying you have done that, and I'm questioning whether you have done that. And I understand you don't have to prove it.
Right.
But when you present, let's say, you know, at the extreme, if you present a map of Wyoming and say, this creates a genuine issue of material fact, we would agree that, no, it doesn't.
No, it doesn't, that's right.
Okay? If you had presented a map of Denver or of downtown Denver, likewise. So now you've presented a map of Lot 45. Do you not have to at least show the trial court that Lot 45 could possibly fit within this description?
And I did.
Okay.
I made those arguments. I showed that based on sworn testimony, on BLM map, that no one disputes is in the same area. I mean, this is not Wyoming or Denver. This is Gilpin County Section 17 lot. A man who knows that land better than any of us said, that's the land. That's the piece of land. It's right over there.
And he says that, but does he also say that this lot is located between Colorado Highway 119 right-of-way and North Clear Creek?
That was his testimony.
And so simply by saying that that's where it is,
I'm saying that gets you past the summary judgment. I think the court was influenced by this court's mandate. It thought that you were writing a parcel and saying, I have no choice in this matter. I don't think the court was saying, I don't agree with Mr. Grand's position. That's when my hands are tied, effectively. What do you really want me to do? The court drew it. And I said, wait a minute. The court was only illustrating that this thing was capable of being described in a sufficient way. But I think their burden is to show where are the monuments, where's the road, where's the creek. You can't just assume these things. And we're saying, hey, look, as part of our defense, prove it. And then the second thing is, Lot 45 is more aptly this parcel than the other. Because it was the only existing 9-acre parcel when this instrument was created.
Thank you. Thank you, counsel. Your arguments were well presented and helpful. This case is now submitted. We will issue an opinion in due course.